Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment.
Shabbat Shalom. On account of a bungled invitation, the Talmud teaches, Jerusalem was destroyed and the Jewish people exiled from their land. The story is one that you may recall from Hebrew school days, and it's traditionally told around the summer observance of Tisha B'Av, the date marking the destruction of the temple. Around the year 70 of the Common Era, there lived a rich man in Jerusalem who had a dear friend named Kamsa and a mortal enemy named Bar Kamsa. The man decided to throw a party and instructed his servant to deliver an invitation to his friend Kamsa, but the servant mistakenly delivered it to Bar Kamsa. On the night of the party, the rich man saw his enemy enter his home, and he confronted him, demanding that Bar Kamsa leave immediately. "Please," said Bar Kamsa, "I'm already here. Allow me to stay, and I'll pay for whatever I eat or drink." "Absolutely not," replied the host. "Get out of my house." "I beg of you," said Bar Kamsa. "Let's not make a scene. Allow me to stay, and I'll pay for half of the party." Once again, the host refused. One last time, Bar Kamsa pleaded, this time offering to pay for the entire party, if only he could be saved from public disgrace. The stone-hearted host refused and forcibly removed Bar Kamsa from the premises. Shamed before his community, Bar Kamsa left fuming at being so ill-treated. Predictably, Bar Kamsa's humiliation turned to anger, which turned to the desire for vengeance. The story goes on to explain that Bar Kamsa reported a plot to the Roman emperor of a brewing rebellion amongst the Jews, setting into motion, to make a long story short, the siege of Jerusalem, the decimation of Jewish leadership, the destruction of the temple, and eventually the exile of the Jewish people from their land. On account of a bungled invitation, our people were exiled from our land. It's a tale worth unpacking. It's a story about the pitfalls of ego, of hard-heartedness, the price of shame, and the human desire for revenge. It's also a story about a Jewish community amongst a Gentile government, a cautionary tale regarding the dangers of infighting amongst our people, a story of a self-inflicted trauma resulting in the most horrific outcome our rabbis could imagine, the end of a sovereign Jewish state. It's a story I also thought about last month, when my eye caught a small item in the press regarding a slightly more recent Jewish party, the annual White House Hanukkah party. It was, by all accounts, a smaller affair than in past administrations. The article itself was about how no Jewish Democratic member of Congress had been invited to the annual gathering of notable national American Jewish leadership. Whatever my thoughts were about the article, and of course, the anticipated call from my mother about why her son, the rabbi, wasn't invited, the item that gave me most pause was the discovery that neither the heads of the reform movement nor the conservative movement were invited that night. It stopped me in my tracks. Here we are, the who's who of American Jewish life, more lamb chops and macher than any other Jewish gathering, a kiddush to end all kiddushes, and the representatives of two-thirds of American Jewry, specifically the progressive American Jewish community, were not invited. A fact that after the fact, I confirmed to be the case with my colleagues. Now, it could have been an oversight. It could have been a reflection of the smaller crowd, or possibly it could have been a predictable response to the fact that the leaders of the progressive movements themselves had in protest canceled their participation in an annual White House holiday call earlier this fall. there's plenty of room for interpretation. A lot of he said, she said, and none of us will ever know for sure. But as we try to make sense of the incident, this snub, this latke gate, I would remind you that it happened in the midst of a not so insignificant week of U.S.-Israel relations. It was, after all, just the day before the Hanukkah party that President Trump formally recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. A historic day for Israel and the American-Israel relationship. An announcement that was the fulfillment not only of a campaign promise, not only of decades-old legislative commitments, but an affirmation of far deeper consequence to Israel from its staunchest and strongest ally. A decision to which even some of the president's most vocal critics were forced to concede that a broken clock is right twice a day. And yet, for a variety of reasons, in progressive American Jewish circles, this announcement was received with either deafening silence, antiseptic acquiescence, and in some circles, outright criticism. Some of that silence, I know, because I felt it myself, was pragmatic in nature. Much in the same way the first President Bush held his tongue upon news of the fall of the Berlin Wall, when it comes to responding to dramatic news, sometimes less can be more. There were protests, rocks being thrown in the territories, and far more unknowns than knowns. Restraint seemed to be the calling of the day. But for many in the progressive community, the lukewarm and critical response reflected a pent-up cynicism against the president. Some questioned the decision on the grounds that it undercut America's role as an even-handed peace broker. Some wondered whether the announcement was a tactical distraction by Trump to shift the news cycle away from domestic concerns and investigations into Russian collusion. Many believed, and it's this point upon which I want to focus, that the lukewarm or critical response reflected the fact that the policies of this administration have been so antithetical to the Torah of liberal American Jewry, so bruising to progressive Jews, that even when an unabashedly pro-Israel decision is made, progressive Jews simply could not bring themselves to embrace or endorse it. And the irony of the tepid response should not be lost on any of us. For 8 years, remember, American Jews openly questioned whether President Obama, despite all that he said, really had Israel's back. And now we have a president who declares Jerusalem Israel's capital, calls out the Palestinians on supporting terrorism, takes the UN to task for anti-Israel rhetoric and policies, visits Jerusalem in the first months of his administration, has Israel's back and then some, and we can't even bring ourselves to utter a simple Todah Rabbah, thank you very much. No wonder the heads of the conservative and reform movement weren't invited to the Hanukkah party. Now, before we write off progressive American Jewry as a bunch of ingrates, we would do well to widen the lens and look also to the other side of the pond. As in all matters, there are at least two sides to the story. Because while liberal American Zionists may indeed need to do tshuva to engage in self-reflection on its lackluster response, what American Jewry does understand is that the Jerusalem decision did not occur in a vacuum. The Jerusalem announcement happened in the context of a series of decisions that by all accounts do not bode well for the future of a two-state solution. The endorsement of Netanyahu's Likud party to annex the West Bank, the passing of Knesset amendments requiring a supermajority to give up Israeli sovereignty over any part of Jerusalem, the legalization of illegal settlements, and the passage of law after law blurring the line between Israel and the West Bank. Each one of these gestures, all the more so collectively, serving to preclude the possibility of a two-state outcome. To be clear, we dare not whitewash or excuse the persistent failures of the Palestinians towards the present state of affairs. It takes two to tango, and no matter what my or your sensibilities may be, it's historically, intellectually, and morally indefensible to lay the blame of the frozen peace process solely at the feet of Israel's democratically elected prime minister. That said, what American Jewry intuits and fears is that if there is no two-state solution, if there is a one-state solution of Israeli rule with 2.7 million and growing politically disenfranchised Palestinian residents, then the Israel we know, the Israel we fight and defend, a state both Jewish and democratic, will have ceased to exist. Such an outcome will be devastating for Israel, devastating for American Jewry, and a devastating rupture for the relationship shared between North American Jewry and Israel. And because things aren't scary enough, what is also increasingly clear to me is that this imminent rupture, this sacrifice of the relationship between progressive American Jews and Israel, is a sacrifice that Prime Minister Netanyahu is well willing to make. Over the past year, I've spoken to enough Israelis, both in Israel and here in the States, to sense that there's a new narrative emerging in Israel regarding American Jewry. You can see it in the Israeli government's disregard over our concerns about the Kotel, about conversion, about religious pluralism, about so many concerns of non-Orthodox American Jewry. In a sentence, it's a narrative that says we don't or won't matter. Give us a generation or two, the writing's on the wall. We will assimilate, our support can't be counted on, and frankly, it's a support that comes with far too many demands attached. Progressive American Jews can't keep the Prime Minister's Knesset coalition together. They are clearly out of favor with the American president. Who needs friends like American progressive Jews, all the more so when Israel enjoys an unprecedented and hitherto unimaginable set of shared interests with Arab states allied against Iran? Who needs those pesky American Jews who ultimately will intermarry themselves into oblivion? Far more reliable, far less complicated, is the unflinching, unwavering support of Orthodox Jews, of evangelical Christians, of communities that represent not just the agenda of a right-leaning Israeli government, but who are also in the good graces of the American president. The picture is a complicated one. There are many pieces in play. The ground is shifting all the time, but the emerging headline is there for all of us to see. There's a party going on. The hosts are President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu and progressive American Jewry. Don't bother checking your spam folder. The invitation was never sent. This is a party to which you are not invited. And if the stakes weren't so high, it's a slight, truth be told, that I could live with. I have, after all, my own problems to worry about. Sometimes the wisest action is to sit a fight out in order to see and live another day. I hear that voice inside, urging me to spend my time worrying about my synagogue, teaching our families how to read Hebrew, light Shabbos candles, open a siddur. These are the things for which I went to rabbinical school. Let Israelis worry about themselves. If I cared so much, I should make Aliyah and live there. Besides, I'm no political scientist. Why even give a sermon on a subject that in the end will end up in the hands of some internet troll and be misrepresented as a form of Israel bashing and not as it's meant, as an expression of my profound love for Israel? Why do any of this if, as a progressive American Jew, I'm not even invited to the party? Like Moses when called to appear before Pharaoh, I'm torn between doing what I'm called to do and the knowledge of how much easier it would be to just do nothing. And as I think these thoughts, my response crystallizes in my mind, a response that brings us back to where we began, back to our Talmudic tale about Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. The message of the story is not that Jerusalem was destroyed because a host couldn't see past a petty grudge. Bar Kamsa's rage, after all, was not directed at the man who ejected him from the party. Bar Kamsa's rage was directed at the rabbis and at the Jewish community who stood around watching the debacle unfold and sat around doing nothing. It was their inaction that prompted his reaction. The fall of the Second Commonwealth came about because the Jewish community stood on the sidelines when it should have and could have intervened. The message of the Kamsa Bar Kamsa story is that when it comes to Israel, neutrality, inaction, and playing it safe, these are the choices that will undermine the Jewish state and the Jewish people. I've said it before and I'll say it again. We have to engage in those efforts that strengthen Israel as a Jewish and democratic state, even and especially in our present political climate. We must find our voice and take action to ensure that a safe and secure Israel, an Israel bound together in spirit and deed with world Jewry of all types and all stripes. We must be smart. We must be pragmatic. We must learn to accept a gift even if we don't like who or why it was given. We must plant seeds for Israel's future, and most of all, we must, if we want to be taken seriously by Israel, take ourselves seriously as Jews. When it comes to Israel, neutrality, impartiality, and disengagement are not and can never be options. Friends, it's 2018. This year marks the 70th anniversary of Israel's birth, the dream of a Jewish and democratic state. It's the theme of next week's Shabbaton with Dr. Danny Gordis, which I hope you will all attend. It is a focus of our programmatic year, culminating with our December congregational mission to Israel. It's a vision that sits at the very core of who I am as a Zionist, who I am as a Jew, and who we are as a synagogue. It's an ideal that today is under threat and is worth fighting for. Leman Sion lo echaseh. Uleman Yerushalayim lo eshkot. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent. For Jerusalem's sake, I will not remain quiet. I will not keep silent, and neither should you. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul. Hallelujah.